All right, welcome everyone to our second Zojo Talk podcast. This month, I have as our special guest, Bob Keeney, Zojo developer and consultant extraordinaire. He's been using Zojo for a really, really long time, probably at least as long as me, if not longer. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you, Paul. I think I started using Real Basic at version 3.5, maybe 3.0. So it's definitely been a while.
Yeah, that's about when I started. I believe the first version I bought was 3.5, the one that worked with OS 10, because I didn't actually have, I never used the OS 9 versions of anything. I'm an OS 10 convert. So as people should probably recognize your name, you've been in the community for a really long time. You run a company called Bikini Software, very clever name. Why don't you take a moment, tell us a little bit about some of the stuff you do there.
Sure. Well, Bikini Software incorporated in the state of Kansas in 2003. So we've definitely been doing consulting for a long time. When we first started off, I was the sole developer. And it wasn't until 2007 we hired our second developer. And then in 2011, we did our third developer. And then in 2012, we brought my wife on board as a full-time developer. But she had been doing a whole bunch of stuff before that. She'd been doing all the HR, payroll, taxes, thank God. And she's got a lot of experience doing project management. She's a DBA. So, I mean, she brings a lot of stuff to the table that is kind of nice to get off my plate. As you said, we are a consulting company mainly. We've got clients all over the world of all sizes. And we've done a little bit of done projects for everybody at this point. We've done Fortune 100 clients. And probably one of my favorite stories is we've also done a project for a yogi that is literally on top of a mountain in Nepal.
So he probably didn't have really great internet access up there.
He could talk to us. I think it was a 2-hour window every day as the satellite passed overhead.
That's exactly what I would picture. Okay, awesome.
Yeah. So that one was kind of fun. So we've done games, we've done utilities of all types, we've done several different accounting applications. You'd think accounting applications would be boring and kind of repetitive. No, surprisingly, each one has been fairly unique to the industry that they've been in, and we've done accounting applications in both desktop apps and in web applications using Zojo. So that's been kind of interesting right there. When we first started out doing web applications, gosh, has it been out 4 years now? Didn't really think it would be a large part of our business. And in the last year, I'd say it's probably accounted for between 40 and 50% of our overall revenue.
Oh, that's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah. And then besides the consulting, we do developer tools. In large part, they've been created from our consulting business. We find a particular need and we do that. And we've just made them available for Zojo developers. We've done a calendar control that's available for desktop apps. And in probably one of the newer ones is called Bikini Shorts, which is a reporting tool for Zojo, which is an alternative way to do reports rather than the built-in Zojo way. We also have Active Record, which is an open source project that's freely available to the community. And we've got a utility called RGen that creates the classes for Zojo. And Active Record came out because we were finding that we were doing the same repetitive things over and over and over again for database applications. Yeah, it's the same load, save, insert, update, all this stuff. And it's kind of nice because it maps the tables and fields from the database and puts them into Zojo classes so that you can do autocomplete, and the compiler will give you some errors if you don't have fields represented and so on. So it's been very, very nice, and it speeds up our development of database applications quite a bit. And then over the years, we've picked up various tools from the community. Probably the biggest one is the formatted text control, which is a word processor control that allows you to do inline images and URLs and a bunch of other things that the Zojo text area control can't do. And then probably the other one that a lot of people know us for is we've been doing training videos. And in 2010, anybody that's a consultant knows that sometimes you have more downtime than you care to admit. And so in 2010, we had a slow time. So I was looking around for things to do. And I said, hey, I've got all these little demo apps floating around. So I started creating videos for them. And as about that same time, I had been contacted, as you well know, a company that wanted an 8-hour set of Zojo videos. And I said, well, A, I can't do it in only 8 hours. And I sort of said, well, why couldn't I do this myself? So I started doing training videos. And at this point, we've got over 52 hours of training video. And this morning, looks like I'm going to have about another hour and a half video on TCP sockets that's going to go up sometime this week. And so, you know, that takes up a lot of our free time right there. The training videos have been awesome, and we've got thousands of people that have signed up, and, you know, I can't even tell you how many hours of training video. It's like something like 8,000 hours have been served up through the Zojo web app that serves all this stuff up.
That's great. Well, I certainly can appreciate the time it takes to make training videos. So that's a lot of work to do that.
Yes, it is. And it's nothing like editing your own voice to realize that you say, so well, a lot. So
yeah, that's probably the biggest thing, is to learn to just not say anything instead of umming and ahhing and humming and doing all those other things. That can be, as I'm doing right now, a tricky thing to get used to, but practice makes perfect. And editing software also helps with that.
Yes, it does. Yes, I use a program called I forgot what it is, ScreenFlow, and that's been very handy because it lets me talk while I'm doing things on screen. And I've tried to do the voiceover redo afterwards, and it just doesn't quite work very well. So,
no, I've tried to do that myself on things, and I've never felt that I can talk while I'm watching a recording of me having done something previously. I can't stay in sync.
Yeah, I can't do it either. And gosh, this is probably 4 months ago. I did a complete broadcast or complete video. It was about 8 hours to do the whole thing. It was my complete web app series. And silly me, I didn't check the audio after the first segment, and I realized that the ceiling fan that was in the room was causing everything to sound awful. You know, it sounded like I was in a wind tunnel. And so I had to scrap that 8 hours and redo it. Now, the good thing about it was that the second time through, it was way cleaner and way nicer, and it really only was about 6 hours rather than the 8 original, but it was still very disheartening. You almost want to put your hands in your head in your hands and cry.
Yeah, that would feel awful to think you have to redo all that. But like you said, sometimes it works out for the best, because the second time ends up being so much better that you're glad you didn't put the first one out there to begin with.
Yes, exactly.
Now, you primarily work on Macintosh stuff?
Yes, we are mainly a Mac shop. We do test quite early and quite often into Windows and occasionally Linux. We don't have very many clients that are asking for Linux desktop applications. So we end up using VMware and using, you know, the remote debug into that, which is actually really nice because you can do testing early and often. And that's usually one of the things I like to recommend for people. If you're creating a cross-platform app, you should really take it into Windows. And if you're on Windows, take it into the Mac side as soon as possible, because you'll realize that there are just certain things that are just different, and you have to take that into account.
So have you, speaking of testing, been able to do any testing using the new versions of the OS 10.10 Yosemite operating system, or Windows 10? That's a lot of 10s. A lot of 10s everywhere these days.
Right. I have not looked at Windows 10. I've looked at it a little bit online, and my gut feeling is that Zojo apps are going to be just fine. You know, there might be a little tweak here and there that we'll need. And then I've loaded up the 10.10 Yosemite on VMware, but I have not really spent much time looking at it. we lost our senior developer in July. He went on to a bigger, better job that we couldn't match the offer to. And so we've got a new person that that started up about 2 months ago, or a month and a half ago now. And, you know, it's just been a struggle trying to get everybody up to speed. So I've not had a lot of time to, you know, test OS 10.10, Windows 10, or even the Zojo Alpha for iOS. I did pull it up a little bit last week and start playing with it, and it looks interesting without violating any rules.
Yeah. Well, I will say that I did grab the Windows 10, I think they call them the Windows 10 Technology Preview, which people can grab and download for free from Microsoft if you register. And I do have that up and running in VMware Fusion. And Zojo, of course, worked great with it, as you probably predicted. It's a little different looking than Windows 8. Cleaner, I suppose. The new start menu is really nice, though, having it back where it belongs. And then kind of they combined in the Windows 8 original start screen, I guess they called it, into the start menu. So now you get both kind of in one place. It's kind of an interesting concept. I think it might actually work pretty well. It's just, it's funny that they skipped all the way to version 9. That's just funny, but.
Well, one of my Windows friends said that there's probably a reason they did that. And he posted a bit of code that if system.name or whatever it is starts with 9, it's either Windows 95 or Windows 98. So
I heard that.
They probably just wanted to avoid, you know, backwards compatibility issues.
That surprised me a little bit. I mean, I can't imagine there's any software that runs on Windows today that, you know, actually ran on Windows 95 also, but maybe it did. I guess Windows 95 was that one 32-bit? I guess it was.
Yeah, it was. It's possible. I agree with you. I don't think it's likely. I think it's more of a marketing scheme to just go, this is just not Windows 8 with new window coverings. This is a whole new operating system. It's kind of like when they went from Vista to Windows 7. Yeah, it's not the same name. It's not even an incremental number. It's a completely different thing, even though Windows 7 was really just Vista cleaned up and a little bit nicer looking. I happen to like Windows 7 a lot. It's still our primary go-to test environment when we check in with Windows.
Yeah, I use Windows 8 myself. Once I put a third-party start menu software into it, I found that it pretty much is exactly like Windows 7, except, you know, it's a little newer, might be a little speedier, tough to say, but I haven't had any issues with it.
The only problem I have with Windows 8 is the Windows just, I've not found a comfortable color that just doesn't scream like, oh my gosh, we're going back to the 1980s.
Luckily, then I'm colorblind, so I don't notice these subtle color changes. So I'm like, hey, it all looks the same to me.
That's probably a good thing for you.
Yeah, and I did put the Yosemite, I guess it's in GM. There's a GM release now. Mm-hmm. So I finally decided to play around with that. I had it in some VMs for a while, but OS X doesn't run very quickly in VMware Fusion. And particularly those older Yosemite betas were just awful slow. But I did put it in there, and it's running, it's usable now, which is good. But I decided to put it on my laptop on a second drive to test it out more thoroughly. And so far, it seems to be working fine.
Well, that's good. I think they did a great job with opening it up into the public beta, because I remember switching over to Mavericks last year and being hugely disappointed in the quality and the bugs that seemed like it should have been obvious, you know, like all the problems with Gmail. And I'm still not entirely convinced that all the problems with Gmail have been fixed in Mavericks. And so that's kind of annoying. And I actually went so far, and I've only done this maybe one other time in my life. I actually sent an email to Tim Cook. Yeah, because, I mean, Steve Jobs had a very famous email address, sjobs@apple.com. So I figured, why not do the same thing? I never heard back from him. But, you know, it's the – look, I expect more from Apple. Yeah, from a developer standpoint, I know you're going to mess with me. And Zojo is a very good example of this where, you know, it's a moving target with trying to work with the new Apple versions. But from a consumer standpoint – I expect it to just work. And last year it didn't just work. And that really made me disappointed. Now, obviously part of that's the issue with updating their OS every year. And if Microsoft goes in that route of updating their OS every year, they'll run into the same issues where they just won't be able to do testing. So opening up the testing into a public beta, I think, was a good idea because they'll find more things. Now, that's assuming that they actually can fix all those things right away. So probably what I'll do is I'll probably install on my laptop first, something that I don't use every day. So if things go horribly, horribly wrong, I'm not totally screwed.
Yeah, that's always been my process. Is I have two computers. I use a Mac Pro from working generally, and I got a MacBook Air that is kind of my secondary backup and travel computer. And that one always, the Air always gets updated first because, you know, it's not critical. I don't need it to get any work done. Mm-hmm. So I'll upgrade that, use that for a little while. And then if things look okay, I'll upgrade the main computer. But I think one of the OS X upgrades, I think it was Lion. I think I waited over 6 months before I upgraded that one, which is pretty long for me.
I wish I had waited a couple months for Mavericks. I did that process last year, and it took about 2 weeks for me to realize that, you know, the Gmail issues were causing fits, and, you know, it really kind of disrupted the workflow for a while. And I didn't want to go to the trouble of downgrading back into the previous version, which was not necessarily very easy.
Yeah, sometimes I don't even know if that's feasible, but yeah. And that's another reason that VMs are just so helpful for this sort of thing, because you can just keep things there if you do need to do some testing. There's not as much of a rush to upgrade. You can put it in there, and if there's some new thing you want to use, you at least have a way to access it that doesn't make you feel like, oh, I got to upgrade my main system.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, I did see a tweet that was last week that said something along the lines of, all right, Windows has now bumped their version up to 10. OS 10 has been version 10 for a while. Linus, your move with Linux, which is still at 3.6. So expect the next version of the Linux kernel to be Linux 10.
Hey, at least Microsoft didn't use a Roman numeral.
Yeah, well, they probably would have gotten pretty badly accused of copying had they gone down that road as well. Although I still see a lot of people, or hear a lot of people, I should say, refer to OS X as OS X, which surprises me considering it's been out for so long now.
Well, it's been out for 10 years now, so.
Longer than that.
Yeah, longer than that even. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me. People are dumb sometimes and just don't even think about it. I've known developers that still call it OS X.
Yeah, maybe it's just you read it and it kind of just comes out that way. You don't say it out loud a lot, I suppose. If you tend to read things more these days than speak them.
Sure. But
go figure. All right, yeah, so that's certainly there's never a shortage of things to test when it comes to the operating system vendors pumping out things. And OS 10.10 is probably going to be released this month, so keep an eye on Apple News if that's the sort of thing you're interested in. Not that it's hard. You know, Apple News tends to get pumped up so much, it may be on the front page of your newspaper if you still get a newspaper.
Right. And I've been a Mac user since 1986. So I got my way through college by doing training on how to use a Mac. And so I was actually doing a fair bit of work on the Mac long before I became a developer. My background is I have a degree in electrical engineering, and was an electrical engineer for many, many years before I switched careers.
Wow, that's old school Mac right there. The first Mac I ever got was, yeah, like 2001 when OS X was available. I would refuse to use a Mac before OS X. So. I used only Windows at that point, and then before that, Atari computers, if you can believe that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first computer I ever really did any programming on was probably a Tandy Radio Shack, Tandy Radio Shack 80 Model 1, I think, was the first one I ever used. So it had a audio tape drive. That's how old it is.
Oh, yes, I remember tape drives. They were awful. Absolutely awful. Well, the next thing I have here on my list that we might want to chat about is the big news where you're located in the Midwest U.S. of the Kansas City Royals that are taking the baseball world by storm and apparently beating teams that, from all rights, people think they shouldn't be beating and have now advanced to the second round of the playoffs.
Right. They'll be in the American League Championship Series, which if you had asked anybody at the beginning of the year, we'd have just been happy just to make the playoffs, much less winning the wild card game and the division series. That was quite a challenge. But it's actually been a really good year in Kansas City because Sporting Kansas City, the soccer team, won the Major League Soccer Cup last fall, I guess it was. And so, it was, I think, they were at the White House on Wednesday and President Obama was congratulating them. And he said, something good's going on in Kansas City these days. So it's a great place to live. And our sport teams, have disappointed us for an awful long time, but they've come through this year so far.
Well, that's good about the soccer. That's one great way to get more awareness of a sport that not a lot of people necessarily would follow is to have your team win.
Yeah. Well, and we've had a Major League Soccer team for years, but they played out at Arrowhead, which seats 80,000 people. So if you have 20,000 people show up for a soccer game, it looks empty. But they built six, 7 years ago, they built the NASCAR Speedway out in Kansas City, Kansas, basically on the other side of town. And they also built a new stadium for Sporting Kansas City. So it fits 23,000 people standing room only. And it's an awesome stadium. I mean, state of the art. You can have all 20,000 people with their cell phones out, texting and all that. And no drop in service. I mean, so they spared no expense when it came to the IT infrastructure. They're very proud of the fact that they can control the entire lighting of everything in the stadium with an iPad.
Wow, impressive.
Yes.
Well, as people may know about me, I'm a huge baseball fan, and I'm disappointed my Red Sox did not make the playoffs this year. But, up until the end of the month, Boston Red Sox are still, quote, the world champions, quote, even though it's not really world. But now it would be kind of cool to see a different team that maybe hasn't seen the limelight in a while. So right now it's Baltimore and Kansas City playing each other, and neither of those teams have been to the World Series in a really, really long time. So
it's been 29 years since the Kansas City Royals have been into the playoffs. So it's a long drought.
Well, that's just the playoffs. Wow.
Yeah.
Baltimore's been in the playoffs more recently than that, but they haven't been to the World Series in probably about the same amount of time, I bet.
I can't tell you, but the last time the Royals were in the playoffs was the year they won it. So,
wow. Well, that'll definitely keep things exciting down there. Baseball playoff time is always where the baseball fans come out of the woodwork that might have been ignoring baseball for the other 6 months or more. It seems it's on.
Well, and I'm really not a baseball fan, but I figured I may not see it again in my lifetime, so I better watch the games now. It was killing us this week because they had 3 games in a row of extra innings. So they were out on the West Coast, and it was like 12:30, 1 o'clock here when the games were getting over. That's tough to get up the next morning and go to work.
Yeah, I do. I should count that as a benefit because I always, when the Red Sox are in the playoffs, you want to stay up and watch the games. And it is exhausting, particularly if you get an East Coast team on the West Coast. Those games finish way late. And you spend all of October walking around with, dreary eyes and in a zombie state because you didn't get enough sleep. Never a great thing. All right. Well, that's cool. I'll definitely be keeping close eye on this series when it starts. I believe it starts Friday, this Friday, if I remember.
Yes, it does.
All right. Well, the next thing I have on my list is actually a little bit of recap from our last podcast I just wanted to touch on. Jeff and I were talking about iPhones, and I wasn't sure which one I was going to get. And I ended up, after going to the Apple Store and checking out the two iPhone 6 sizes, ended up getting the, quote, smaller one, the iPhone 6, and not the iPhone 6 Plus. After looking at them both in the store, I actually picked up the iPhone 6 the first, and I was like, oh, well, this isn't too bad. The iPhone 6 Plus isn't that much bigger. And you know, I thought the iPhone 6 was a 6 Plus at first. And then I looked to my left and they had an actual iPhone 6 Plus. And I was like, oh, gosh, that is really large. And I used that for a little bit. But yeah, I didn't find it to be a comfortable portable type thing, especially jumping from, I had an iPhone 5 before, jumping all the way from a 5 to a 5 Plus was just a bit too shocking for me. Maybe after I use an iPhone 6 for a couple of years, I'll think, oh, the iPhone 6 Plus, that's a good size. You know, I can, you know, go up in baby steps. But so far I've had my iPhone 6 for a couple of weeks and I didn't even have to wait. I just walked into the Apple store like the next day. They came out on a Friday. I was in there on a Saturday evening. They had some. I just walked in and bought them. No problem.
Yeah, our contracts are up in, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks. So we'll take a look at them more then. We've had some friends that have the 6 and kind of went through the same process. They looked at the 6 Plus. And these were all guys, and they were like, nah, it's just too big for, you know, even for my hands. And, yeah, so they opted for the 6. I played around with the 6. It's okay. I mean, the only real reason to get it would be Apple Pay, which isn't really out yet anyway. So it doesn't really mean anything. I've got a 5S, so I've got already have the Touch ID. And the more I use it, the more I love it. I mean, not having to enter a passcode in to get to your iPhone is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I came from an iPhone 5. I did not have the Touch ID, and I do really love the Touch ID on the iPhone 6. If I had a 5S, I don't know that I would really consider an iPhone 6 at this point.
Yeah, I've only been using the 5S for 3 months at this point. I got it as far as an upgrade with employees switching and all that. So, I'm kind of wondering, well, do I really need to get the 6? No, I don't. But if I want to use Apple TV or Apple Pay, I want to do that. As you know, we've been doing a fair amount of traveling over the last year and a half. So that sort of makes a lot of sense for us. If I can carry a few less credit cards around, that would be helpful.
Yes, that is always helpful. I did end up getting a little wallet case for my iPhone 6 so I can stick a couple credit cards in it. That way I don't have to always be lugging my wallet around with me. Well, speaking of that traveling, Bob, that's a great segue. I find what you're doing pretty fascinating. So why don't you tell our listeners exactly what this traveling is you're doing right now?
Okay. I'll backtrack a little bit and say I've been working from home since 2000. So oftentimes the drawback to that is you get a little bit of cabin fever. And, I went camping a few times as a kid, so didn't really care for it. Sleeping in a tent, sleeping on the ground, squatting in the woods is just not my thing. But one January Saturday, you know, it was kind of cold and snowy. I just said, hey, why don't we go down to the RV show in downtown Kansas City, Missouri? And so we did, and the first thing we did is we paid our money. We go up and opens up into this big room, and we walked into one of those big fifth wheel RVs. And I went, holy cow, this thing's bigger than my first apartment. And I sort of said, wow, I can live in this thing. And I turned to my wife, and she looked at me, and we went, yeah, we could live in this thing. So that started the whole process. Almost 3 years ago now, we downsized. We had a two-story house with big yard that took lots of maintenance. We downsized into a split-level house and all the yard work outside of the fence is provided by the homeowners association. So we got our finances in order, and now we're the proud owner of a 40-foot Class A diesel RV, 4 slide outs, the whole bit. So since July of 2013, we've been to Yellowstone and back. We've been to the Southwest and back. And last year was the Zojo Developers Conference in Las Vegas. So we took 2 weeks getting out there. We were a week in Vegas. Then we spent 3 weeks coming back. At one point, I could rattle off everything, but I think we did something in the neighborhood of 3,700 miles, 12 campgrounds, 12 national parks and monuments. I mean, it's just been crazy. And since then, we've been to Michigan, and then we've been twice down to Winfield, Kansas for the Walnut Valley Bluegrass Festival.
Well, I think it's important to mention also is that, you know, you're not just kicking back with your feet up. Well, you know, Bikini Software rakes in the billions. You're working in this thing.
Yeah. It's been interesting. The first year we did not have two really office spaces. Last winter we had the back end renovated. We moved some chests or from some drawers from the side into the closet. And then we have a desk that sort of folds up and that becomes an extra desk. And it's been kind of nice because we've had three people working in the RV. So Carol, myself, and then my son was homeschooled. So he was actually doing work in there too. And it's been challenging a little bit because the hardest thing about doing that sort of work is the internet access. For example, something like if we were trying to do this on the road, we'd probably have to schedule it for like 7 a.m. because campground Wi-Fi. Well, the good news is all campgrounds have Wi-Fi. The bad news is that most campground Wi-Fi really stinks, and that's putting it nicely.
Yeah, it's like dial-up on a good day.
yeah, and it all depends on the campground and all that. And you know, all of them say, "Well, don't stream any video." Well, yeah, good luck trying to enforce that. And after about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, campground Wi-Fi is useless. So we end up having two USB cards. We've got one from Sprint and one from Verizon. And, you know, the bigger city, Sprint works really nice. And then outside of that, Verizon usually works. So, and then we've in the RV itself, we've got a router so that we can all share the same internet connection. So that works pretty good. And generally what we were doing when we were parked in a spot, we'd work in the morning and then eat lunch and then go out and explore.
Oh, that's a nice pattern. Breaks up the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, when we're on the go driving, you know, I can't do any work at that point. But, you know, Carol did a fair amount of work doing database design and things like that while we were on the go. And then, you know, Devin, my son, yeah, was doing whatever schoolwork you needed to get done. So that was it worked out fairly well.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, we've been quote campers for probably about 10 years now with nothing quite so extravagant. We have a camper that attaches to my pickup that we pull around to campgrounds. Usually we pretty much stay here in Maine for like long weekend type trips in the summer. The camping season in Maine is short.
I can imagine.
I actually just brought last week the camper up to the camper dealer to get it winterized because there's no more camping this season. It's too cold at night, and the camper is not – it doesn't like freezing weather. That's really bad for it. So you winterize it by putting the antifreeze in the plumbing systems and whatnot and wrap it up in a fancy camper cover and let it get buried in snow all winter.
Yeah. Kansas City doesn't get that much snow, so we don't have to worry about the, you know, the snow on top of the RV. But we've got another two football games, I think, to go to at Kansas State University. My son plays in the marching band. So we'll take the RV out there probably twice more. The last one will be right around Thanksgiving. And at that point, after that, we'll winterize it. And we won't go through the whole process of doing the antifreeze. They'll blow the lines out, which is good enough for them, because that's what they do for their own rental fleet. So.
Yeah, that's what I used to do in the smaller pop-up camper that we had, the tent camper. I used to just use an air compressor and blow the water out. But this one's bigger, and it's still under warranty. So I actually have the camper dealer do it officially so that, you know, I'm covered when things wear out and stuff like that.
Sure. The extended warranty on those things is pretty important. And RVs, as you know, something always goes wrong with them.
It is amazing, but it is fun. You know, I'll take my laptop with me when we go to camping trips so I can do a little work if necessary. And it's always fun to be like that. And like you said, the campground Wi-Fi is just, it's almost a joke at times to some of the campgrounds. They have a big sign that says we have Wi-Fi, but then you go there and they have Wi-Fi in like a 100-foot circle that's around like the check-in booth, but that's it. And depending on where you are in Maine, you may not get a cell signal at all. So it can be pretty isolated.
Yeah, we were pretty lucky on the Southwest trip. The only campground we really had a problem with is we got one a little outside of town at Mesa Verde. And it was early enough in spring and it was probably during the day as like 50-ish. And so it was a little chilly, nice north wind coming through, and couldn't get a cell signal to save our life. And the Wi-Fi signal was just too weak. So I remember going up to the clubhouse with the laptop, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, you know, it'll be nice enclosed space. It may not be heated, but it'll be nice and tight and all that. Well, quarter-inch gaps between the logs just let the wind go right through. Probably the coldest I have ever been while programming. It was the most unpleasant experience I ever had. We only spent 2 nights there, and I think we were happy to get done. That was pretty much the last major stop on the trip. I think we were ready to get home at that point.
You'd need a heated keyboard.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's nothing worse than trying to type when your fingers are cold.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm like that all winter here. Like you, I do work at home, and, you know, I'm the only one here other than me and the cat. So my little office is usually well heated by my Mac Pro, which pumps out some serious heat for the spring and the fall. Like right now, it's keeping my office pretty toasty with the door closed for this podcast. But I do have a little space here I'll run in the winter to keep the fingers from getting frozen solid.
Yeah. It's interesting working from home. I mean, there's so many distractions, or there can be distractions. And then there's the times where it's like, you know, I just really don't feel like working, even though I'm at work. You know, it's just sometimes you need mental health days. I mean, I don't know how long you've been doing it. I've been doing it since 2000, so it's a long...
Yeah, you've got me beat. I've been working from home full-time since 2008, and before that, I would work at home a couple days a week, and I started doing that back in... So in 2003 is when I started working from home, probably 2 to 3 days a week, and then switched to full-time at home in 2008. I was joking with some parents at the soccer game last week. We were talking about stuff, and I said, I don't know if I can go back to a regular office where I got to drive in town and do something. If I ever have to do that at some point in the future, I don't know that I would ever want to do that. It scares me.
I don't think I could do that anymore. You know, it's been an awful long time, and I don't always have the best filter on my mouth anymore. So I'm not sure that I'm not sure I can play well with others in an office environment. I swear at my computer an awful lot sometimes.
Yeah. My cats might occasionally perk up their ears and hear me grumbling, but yeah, so it's just a different change. I really like it though. I greatly enjoy working from home. I love having my own little dedicated office here. You know, everyone else is at school, so it's not like I have a lot of distractions other than the summertime when everyone's on school break. That can become more challenging.
Yeah. Working when there's lots of noise in the house can be problematic sometimes. But I was trying to think, we probably met for the first time at one of the Zojo developer conferences. What was the first one you went to?
Us. Wayback Machine here. The first one I went to, I'm guessing it was 2007 or 2006, maybe.
Okay. I think my first one might've been 2005. It was down in Austin and it was still being held in the convention center. And so the hotel was 2-3 blocks away and then you had to walk there. Okay. And I remember the first year I, you know, didn't hardly meet anybody because there was no like real central gathering point. You know, no bar to go hang out in, anything like that. And then the next year they switched it to the Omni,
That's the first one I went to was definitely at the Omni.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And then, you know, I love the developer conferences because for somebody like you and me who work from home, it's like the only time in the world or the only time of the year where it's like Christmas every single day where I get to talk shop. And everybody, I don't have to explain what Zojo is and what it does. And, you know, I can grumble about, you know, whatever deficiencies I feel it may have, you know, with another group of people and we're all on the same page.
Yeah. Well, I know the one this past year, I mean, I'm gone for a whole week down at whatever the conference is. And, you know, people are like, oh, you're gone for a whole week. Isn't that, you know, exhausting? I'm like, no, it's like a vacation. I get to hang out. I don't have to, you know, make the kids lunches. I don't have to walk them to the bus stop. I'm just doing Zojo stuff all day long. It's great, but you're still exhausted when you get back.
Yeah, well, and not only that, but it's the developer conferences are great because you can learn a lot of stuff about Zojo in a very short amount of time. But the value I have, you know, after being in the industry for as long as I have, it's the conversations you have, you know, in between sessions, at sessions, you know, the night, you know, you hang out in the bar and just talk until they kick you out. And those are the conversations that are just awesome. And so if anybody out there who's not been to a developer conference, I mean, I think it's well worth it. I've had clients show up at the conference just so that they could talk to me and several other consultants. And, you know, that's the easiest way to get hold of everybody, right? Because the people that tend to go are not always the professionals, but a lot of us are the consultants and have been doing it for a while and can justify the cost. And it's great. I mean, I can't say enough good things about the developer conferences. Cause back in 2008, when the economy collapsed, Zojo stopped doing them for a while. And the organization you and I were both part of at the time, ARBP, held a small one in Boulder, Colorado. And then we held another one in Atlanta. And those were a blast. And it's a lot of work to put together, but you know, they're fun.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I agree. I mean, before I started working here at Zojo, I would go to the conferences and, you know, always find consulting work that way. And even the last few years, you know, I have people that come up to me now as a Zojo rep saying, okay, who are the consultants here? Who do I need to go talk to so I can run my project past them and stuff. So yeah, it's definitely a place you can find work. It's a place you can find people to do your work. It's a great time. And we are back in Austin for next year's conference. For the first time in several years. A different location, though, not the Omni, a different hotel. I don't remember the name off the top of my head, but
I don't remember either, but I know I'll be there. We'll probably do two sessions. Carol will probably do some sort of database session, and I'm debating on whether or not to do a active record session, sort of like what I did last year, or a reporting session. So
I can tell people I'll be doing iOS sessions. Many iOS sessions, I'm sure. So,
yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said earlier, I've just started playing around with it, and you know, it's a different beast because you know iOS has got its own terminology, and you guys are doing a great job of kind of warping the terminology into something that us Zojo users are used to. I'd say there's still going to be a fairly big learning curve with iOS. I mean, it's
yeah, well, it's something that Jeff and I talked about too. Is there is you know, there's a different design philosophy for when you're creating an iOS app. You know, it's generally it takes over the screen. You have to think about how you're laying out stuff much differently than you do in a desktop and even a web app, which have more similarities. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there's just concepts that are different. But I think we've hopefully simplified them enough so that not only just Zojo developers, but people in general will find this more approachable way to create iOS software.
Yeah, it should be interesting. And the fact that you can do a run and debug in the simulator just like you can with Xcode is very cool. And the fact that you can migrate it onto an actual phone to do testing as well relatively easily, that's pretty cool too.
Yep, it does all those things and it's fun. Yeah, now you're like, oh, I need to go and find that alpha and play with it.
Well, now I'm like, oh crap, I'm kicked out of the alpha program now for revealing too much.
No, that's within reason, and everyone knows we're working on this, and it is an alpha, and we don't hide that fact, and we're very eager and working incredibly hard to get this to beta to get way more people looking at it, so that we can have apps show up in the app store that say that they were made with Zojo.
Right. And rest assured, if anybody has not been to bikinibriefs.com, rest assured that I'll have some sort of review on it as far as, you know, what it does well, what it doesn't do so well, what it's still lacking and all that. I mean, because let's face it, it'll be a version one product. We already know that there's some things that won't be in it that a full iOS app would do, but it's a good start, and it'll only get better.
Well, that sums it up pretty well, I think. All right, looking at the clock here, it looks like we're in between are we're a little under an hour, so the timing seems to have worked out well. I may have to adjust the future ones if this proves to be the way that they go. And sure. And speaking of the conference, one thing that I'm starting to think about in my head is maybe doing some sort of live podcast right from the conference when it's in Austin. Maybe have a little table set up and have different attendees there come and sit down and have a little chat for a little while. So we'll see what I can work out into the schedule. But
I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, I think that could be fun. I just I seriously considered kicking off something like this at the conference last year, but I hemmed and hawed, and the big concern was, much like a campground, is, you know, the Wi-Fi at the hotels, and would it be up for doing something like this? So it's, but in the case of a podcast, I don't necessarily need to broadcast it live. I could just record it there and then publish it after. So I think I'll probably have a few options to work with.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
All right. Well, thank you again, Bob. This is Bob Keeney from Bikini Software. That's BKEENEY.com. I always tend to mix up whether there's an E there at the end or not.
Lots of E's, one N.
Yeah, lots of E's, one N. And so do check that out, and stay tuned for next month's podcast, which will be sometime in November. I don't remember the exact date. All right, thanks, Bob. Have a great day.
All right, thanks, Paul. Have a good one.